Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
I didn't do it, Lisa.
Okay. Thanks, David. You've just let me down massively on this, the shortest day of the year.
So I know, very exciting.
It is very exciting because potentially later today we will see a conjunction
of Jupiter
and Saturn. Yeah, 4:30 this afternoon.
Is that right?
First time in 800 years. Won't happen again for another 50 years at least. And it will be a bright, bright light in the evening sky, which is something we really need, seeing as I'm now locked down in Tier 4 in the UK. I need a bright light in my life. Friday, though.
Lisa.
Feeling very wintry. We had a whole blizzard of news.
Yeah,
Colin.
But Lisa, the bright light in your life, that's me. That's me, darling. I'm a bright light in your life.
Oh, my goodness. Do you want me to put that light down, Lisa? Should I turn that light off?
It's Christmas time, Lisa. It's Christmas time. It's time for a little bit of cheer and festivity and just, you know, loving and all the rest.
Don't you start singing Colin Clark.
No, please don't start singing.
Anyway.
He threatened that on the last podcast,
but David
put him firmly in his place. But yeah, let's get seasonal and talk about blizzard, because there was a blizzard of WRC news towards the end of the week. And Jari-Matti Latvala will start with the news surrounding the mighty Finn.
Yeah, and big news, wasn't it? I mean, it really wasn't. I don't think, certainly in the couple of days leading up to that, you know, just about everybody, apart from George, Lise, yourself, Colin and I, had been seen in a vascular walking in and out of Tommy's place.
Well, even someone's cigars had been apparently smelled, wasn't it? Provero, Carlo Provero, someone had smelled his cigar smoke in your vascular.
Oh, my God, Colin.
I mean, it was getting to the point of being quite ridiculous. But yeah, ultimately we found out it was Jari-Matti. Jari-Matti Latvala is the new team principal replacing Tommi Mäkinen at Toyota Gazoo Racing. And to put it into the wider management structure, Kai Lindstrom will maintain authority, if you like, over the sporting side. He's the sporting director. And Tom Fowler is the technical director. That's the kind of top table, if you like, now. Obviously, Tommy has gone to become Toyota's motorsport advisor. And Harunason, of course, is his project project director. Mm. That's his title. So Japanese influence in there as well, obviously. So yeah, it's those between those four, they will decide the strategy and the way that Toyota Gazoo Racing continues in the World Rally Championship.
It was a massive, massive surprise, David. As you say, lots and lots of names mentioned. We talked to Latvala during the summer, and we put that very question to him. You know, if the opportunity came along, would you be interested? And clearly he did say he would be interested, but even he said it's probably too early. It's probably too early. You know, how do you go from a driver straight into the position as team boss? I mean, it has happened in the past. Malcolm's done it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Malcolm did it, and, you know, probably at a fairly similar age. And Malcolm didn't want to go into his 40s, did he, as a driver? I can't remember exactly. But, you know, I think what we need to do here is we need to keep this in context that Jari-Matti Latvala has, as I was saying there, he has no management experience. He psychologically, you could argue that he's not the strongest guy in the pack. But what they've got with Jari-Matti Latvala is somebody that Akio Toyoda, the president of Toyota Motor Corporation, identified with immediately. And for me, this is exactly why Jari-Matti is now in the position that he's in. Because when Toyota first met him in 2014 or 15 or whenever it was, immediately, Jari-Matti was talking about, you know, his history of driving Celicas and Corollas, and Toyota-san saw the passion in Jari-Matti's eyes, and that's what he wants. That he wants a figurehead, somebody at the top of that of that team that can go out there and people can relate to. And basically, you know, that for me is what he will be. He will be a figurehead. I can't imagine that he's going to take a huge amount of influence in the kind of strategic decisions over where the team goes. He will, of course, have some development time in the car, but they've still got Juho Hänninen, who is, you know, clearly a superb test driver. You know, the Yaris WRC is testament to that. And what Jari Matti can bring, as I said in my piece last week, you know, he's been competing in the WRC for so long, for 17 years or something. You know, he has got incredible depth of knowledge and data in his mind. And unlike you and I, Colin, and I couldn't say George and Lise, he can actually retrieve that. He can remember stuff, which is something that we can't do these days.
He's quite unusual for a driver to have that level of retention and detail at his fingertips. Mm-hmm. Normally, the drivers will refer a little bit to their co-drivers, a little bit at least. But Yari's tremendous. I was hoping I would see him driving again, but I'm totally delighted for him. And let's be honest, the heritage of drivers running rally teams, drivers and co-drivers running rally teams, John Todd, Uwe Andersson, Andrew Cowan, of course, Malcolm Wilson. I suppose if you go back to other lesser teams, which we'll not even bother doing that. Those are three or four of the big ones there. And that's enough. You know, Jari Matti is going to do a great job. He'll make a great contribution. You're part of a team. You know, any shortfalls he's got in management skills are more than made up for by the rest of the team and the structure of the team. And remember, Gazoo Racing now effectively has encompassed Cologne, the old Toyota Team Europe headquarters, and the Formula One team, albeit denuded somewhat. They've got their little base in Estonia. They've got the big new base. It's no longer, you can't really call it Tommy's place. It's not the farm up in Pupula. It's now some massive facility just to the south of Jyväskylä. So, you know, it's a great depth of experience and great people there. So Jari Matti will be the catalyst, and he'll be the driving force. You need somebody in there that is questioning when someone says, well, we'll do this. You need somebody in there that says, hang on, is that enough? Why don't we do this extra thing? We did this in the past. Why don't we do that? Someone to just say, oh, well, okay, yeah, we'll go that extra little bit. You need somebody to push these teams all the time. You need someone to say, let's just do that extra little bit of test. We've got a car sitting there. Let's go and do it. That's what makes a difference between first and second. Simple as
but
that.
Can I
ask a question, though? Is Jari Matti too nice? Because sometimes you need a management setup. You can have really fantastic, lovely, personable people in charge, so long as they've got a Rottweiler to be the enforcer.
He can be the Rottweiler without being the Rottweiler, because he'll come up with the suggestions and the ideas. And he doesn't need to force the issue. He's got people around him that will force the issue, you know. He's dropping in an idea. People need to listen. He's the team principal. I think we need to do another test. So people need to go and find the other test, not just say, well, Jari, it's a little bit difficult. We don't want to do it. The guys are on holiday this week. No, we need to go and test. This is a rally team. Holidays, unfortunately, are second.
Yes, here's the thing. Tell me. You know, what is interesting is that the Latvala appointment is similar to the Mäkinen appointment. It's built on that personal relationship that David talked about with Akio Toyoda. And Akio Toyoda is, without any question, one of the most astute, successful businessmen anywhere in the world. The guy has rarely made a corporate mistake in his life. He didn't make a mistake with Tommy, although a lot of people questioned it. And he probably hasn't made a mistake with Latvala. But they are two polar opposite types of people. You talk about the need for a Rottweiler. Well, you know, the Mäkinen brand, that was brand Rottweiler at times, by all accounts. You know, the actual management style, although they've been put in place in the same type of process by Toyota-san, you know, the style will be enormously different. And for me, that's the biggest danger. You know, you're taking what is actually a very, very successful operation that's developed a culture, and it's a culture of its own. Whether you like that culture or not, you know, that doesn't matter at the end of the day, because
Colin,
it was a success.
Colin.
George, it was a successful culture. You're now potentially changing that culture, and that for me would be really the only worry, that it might take a little while for that to adapt.
Colin, I understand what you're saying, but remember, the team has already changed. The changes have been made now. It is now the small Tommy Mäkinen Racing Gazoo team has gone. It's been absorbed by the bigger organism. And yes, there is a danger that you'll lose that drive and that keenness and that determination and that single-minded devil-may-care attitude that we're going to do this no matter how inconvenient it is for so many people. And with a bigger corporation, that's always the case. But remember, Toyota haven't co-opted this into Toyota Motor Corporation. They've co-opted it into Gazoo Racing, which is a much smaller operation designed to be able to react to these things. That's the ethos is there. So hopefully, and I'm sure Haruna-san will understand that very well, and he'll drive his people, you know, as the project leader. He'll be telling Yari, go out there and make sure we've got everything we need, Yari. And Yari will go out there and he'll look and it's, well, why haven't we got weather crews here? I would like to see more here and a little bit extra testing. Hang on, the conditions are changing. The tyre rules are maybe going to change a little bit here. Kai will give them the insights into that. Yeah, I think they're well equipped to do it. Of course, it's a time of change, but as long as you realise you've changed, you still need to drive in there. I don't think you need the Rottweiler character. What you can do it with is cold, determined knowledge, intelligence, and application. The determined application is the sort of Rottweiler aspect, and you do need that. I know that when I think back to my time as a team manager, all the really great wins we had was when I was behaving, as you might say, like a Rottweiler. I think I was just being determined when I was pushing everyone around me. And yes, it does work, you know. And I mean, you do need that. Yari wants to win. I'm sure that you'll see quite a determined Yari in there, and I'm convinced he'll do a great job.
But equally, you know, how much of a Rottweiler do we need when we've got people, you know, like Sebastian Ogier and Elvin Evans, two very sort of senior drivers. There, you know, they and Kalle Rovanperä and Takemoto Katsuta will find themselves pulled along by certainly for another year.
I'm not sure, David, that that's where you need to look. Let's drop this Rottweiler analogy, because no one wants to be a Rottweiler. But where we're looking at perhaps being a little harder, a little tougher, perhaps that's not where the focus of that toughness is. How did you describe it, George? What was the phrase you used? You said it was determination, didn't you?
The focus and the professionalism, people around you that need to know that know what they're doing, that can envisage and see all the variables. Monty's the biggest event left for that these days.
But it's maybe not the drivers we're talking about here. Maybe it is the development processes, the engineering side of things. Maybe that is where that slightly tougher Latvala might need to come. I don't have many concerns about Yari Matti. I think it's really, really interesting, and I honestly think there are probably more positives in the appointment of Latvala than you can potentially argue. I think he will, George. I think what it brings to the team is relevance as well. It brings relevant experience. You know, Mäkinen and Lindström, fantastically successful pairing nearly two decades ago. Latvala has that current experience to deal with
these drivers.
Yeah,
he's just got out of the cars, hasn't he?
He's just got out of the car.
Yeah, he knows the cars.
But David, I'm going to put a question to you, David. Do you mind?
No.
Did you have a really good point? Because I'm going to put a question to you. What concerns me, my only concern, really is my only concern, and George, you touched on it earlier, I think David, you touched on it as well. You know, management by committee rarely works in WRC. You know, last time we saw it falling apart really was Subaru, where there was no one in charge, no particular person in charge. Well, it might have been Lapworth, it might have been Richards, it might have been
Solberg.
Solberg a lot of the time, you know, and it destroyed that team. They pulled themselves apart. I'm not convinced, David, that management by committee is a great way forward. I think there has to be an absolute decision maker there. And is that absolute
but
decision
who,
maker?
So who was that decision maker last year at Toyota?
It wasn't Tommy.
Ultimately, I think he made the right decisions. He put the foundations in place. But increasingly, I think those decisions were made by Fowler and Lindström. And I think they still will be.
Okay.
Because, you know, at times we saw, you know, Tommy didn't go to all of the manufacturers' meetings for whatever reason, you know. But he was maybe late arriving at an event or something, I don't know. But increasingly we had seen that the sort of seat of power within the team, if you like, moving a little bit. And that was the point I was going to make, that, you know, to question exactly how much of an authoritarian or, you know, how autocratic was Tommy Mäkinen. I don't think he really was at all. So, you know, for me, I think we, as I said earlier, we need to keep it in context. I can't see that Yari Matti will be making big strategic decisions. You know, he'll work with Haruna-san in Japan and sporting side Kai and technical side Tom, and he'll be there, you know, for the drivers to talk to. Ogier, you know, he will. I'm sure Sebastian would be slightly bemused by the move of this guy who's younger than him coming in to become his boss. But, you know, it's a massively different scenario to when they're at Volkswagen, essentially competing within the same team. Now they're pulling 100% in the same direction.
Yeah. So I suppose...
How hilarious do you think it is as well, though, we're now talking about a team principal that we saw as a teenage driver in the forests of Wales.
Yeah.
I'm feeling really suddenly very, very old, and also looking at, you know, young Oliver Solberg, who used to be around Petter's feet. I'm feeling so old with Yari Matthews' appointment.
And like you said, totally, Lise, and with Oliver as well. You know, that was the other very, very big news from Friday. I think, again, it had started to be talked about quite a lot on social media, but it was still quite a surprise when it was announced that he was going to Hyundai Motorsport for 2 years. Or was it? You know, I think I was kind of envisaging that, you know, Skoda has had these programs with these young guys like Calle Rovanperä, Pontus Tiedemann, Esa-Pekka Lappi, and they've been there at least a couple of years. And I just kind of thought that he would remain there for another year of driving in WRC2, and the move would come at the end of next year, but it's come a year early.
Yeah, it has. It has come a year early. You know, when I talked to him last, it was at the end of the Monza Rally Show. Not Rally Show, Monza Rally. It wasn't a show.
Rally
was
Monza.
It? Rally Monza. Rally Monza. Thanks, David. You're a detail man. I'm not a detail man.
That event in Northern Italy, where it snowed a bit.
In the snow, yeah. And someone was crying world champion.
There weren't too many rallies to get confused about no, this year.
Thanks, Lise. Thank you. I am a year older, though, that's for sure. you know, at the end of that, he made it very clear, you know, his place in rallying next year would still be in the R5 car, still a learning year. For Oliver Solberg. And you know what? I kind of just assumed it would be more of what they've done this year, partly supported by Skoda, maybe in part supported by their sponsors. And I think it's a fantastic move. I think Hyundai, in some ways, I think they feel that they maybe missed out on Rovanperä. I know that Rovanperä has been with Toyota, or the pre-deal deal was done years
ago. I don't
ago.
Get that. You know,
I think they have, David.
But I don't know. Perhaps if we're too close to it, but you know, for me, the any kind of suggestion that Calle Rovanperä was going anywhere else was bonkers.
No, but it doesn't mean to say that Hyundai might not still feel they missed out on him. That's
but
my
he was
point.
Never there to
I'm
miss
saying,
out on.
Well, they missed out on signing when he was 12 years old. You know, okay. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But you know, you look at it and you say, my goodness, if we could have had him, wouldn't that have been great? So, you know, it's quite clear. I think it's quite clear. And George, you've seen a little bit of young Oliver Solberg. By the way, the first time I met young Oliver Solberg, he was, I think, about 7 months old, 8 months old, at dinner. I had dinner with Oliver Solberg when he was 8 months old. Genuinely. And I felt so out of place. I was sat at the top table. I think Petter had just won Rally GB, and it was the end of your dinner. You were there, I'm sure, George, as well. In some fancy hotel in Wales, and I was at the top table with David Richards, with Nick Fry, I think, was there as well.
Yeah, Nick. There was
myself, there was my boss, and there was Oliver sitting, and he was beautifully well behaved.
Most importantly, what did Oliver have for supper? Well, 7 months old.
David.
Foie gras and a very rare steak.
Yeah. You know, I think we've all seen this year that you know, he is an exceptional talent, and I have to say, you know, we watched Rovanperä through his formative years, and he was great, and he put in these incredible times. There is something a bit different about Solberg, something a bit different, and I don't know what it is. I absolutely hesitate to say he's a more intelligent driver, because that really is demeaning to Calle, but it just. He seems more analytical, David. He seems to be able to compute things.
I'm not sure. I really don't think you can make a judgment like that. What the only place
but
you
there's
can
a
make
a difference? What
no,
is the difference?
No, the only way you can make a judgment right now is that one of them talks expansively.
Right, maybe that's what it is.
And you couldn't say that Calle is less analytical. For me, because we don't know, because he's never gone through any analysis in the way that Oliver has.
That's true.
You know, you talk to Oliver about his tyre choices in Monza and what he did in Monza, and he looks so deeply. And there's, you know, there's a huge amount of his father and Pernilla, his mother, in there, and you know the whole family history in
there.
Looks
like his mum.
Yeah.
But you know, it's that ability to then communicate what his thoughts are and what and everything. Kelly's got no real interest in doing that.
That's
and we can't condemn
point.
Him for that at all.
No, no, we can't. And I'm not condemning. I'm just saying there is a difference. And you have, because that's because you're that sort of person. I think you're more, you look at that side of things better than I do. I just see the superficial. but you know, you've hit the nail on the head there. I think he is. And maybe that is the only difference. Are we looking at a difference in terms of their performance, where they're at in their careers, or is it very similar?
You know, I spoke to Andrea Adamo about this, about the young drivers that they've got for next year, and he put it absolutely brilliantly, as he always does. And he said he sees two drivers in Oliver Solberg and Jari Huttunen. He sees Oliver, and this is always, as is everything historically with Andrea, it's in Lancia terms. He sees Oliver as Didier Auriol, and Huttunen as Juha Kankkunen. And George, you'll know better than any of us, but you know, Didier always had time for the media, always had a smile on his face. Both unbelievably quick and brilliant drivers, and I think it's more of a comment on perhaps their character and their persona rather than their ability behind the wheel. But that's the way they are coming from. And there's definitely an element with Calais that he's a Finn. You know, and he's an old spec Finn. You know, he's not a Mikko Hirvonen or a Jari Matti Latvala. He is a kind of Kankkunen or that kind of guy that is just keeps himself to himself, stays quiet, and just gets in the car and drives.
I can sort of agree with you there. I've not really worked enough with Calais to be able to comment 100% on it. But yeah, on the face of it, 100%. It's always interesting when these young guys come up because, you know, we've had a number come up over the last two or three years and they're the latest, greatest thing. And then two years later, they've not got a drive anymore, you know. And that's Esa Pekka away without a drive. And he was the great shining hope for Finland. And now without a drive, which just upsets me massively. Just going back to your initial analogy, you made me reminisce for a second or two about Didier and Juha. Fantastic.
I'll put the kettle on, George.
Team.
I'll put the kettle on.
I'm not gonna start. But I did get a lovely warm glow through me when you said that. I thought, Craigie, we had some fun with those guys. We really did. It was pretty amazing.
Absolutely. But you know, we talked, Colin, you and I have talked about this. We've all talked about this a lot. You know, where was Oliver's greatest drive this year? And for me, you know, Monza was superb. But Petter, his father, thinks that Rome, where he drove on tarmac, pure tarmac for the first time and finished third. And did, you know, just this is the point that, you know, we're not having these great spikes of a massive result and then a huge crash and a, you know, and you look back to last year, you know, when he was in America and we can't. OK, America is America in terms of the American Rally Association. It's not a super competitive championship. Obviously, it is the birthplace and the home of rallying. Obviously, isn't it, Colin?
Yes. Centered on the Seattle, which is that the East Coast or West Coast? West Coast.
Never eat shredded wheat. West Coast.
Yeah.
West Coast.
Never
eat shredded wheat.
Never.
I'd just like to point out this is David trying to work out which way is west. Yeah.
Or you could
east.
Also have naughty elephant squirt water. You heard that one?
Oh, my Lord.
So anyway, when
senior staff writer, Fish.com.
when he was in America last year, driving, you know, it's not an easy car to get in and drive. You talk to David Higgins about these WRXs, these open class cars. They're knocking on the door of 400 horsepower with some proper aero. And he was in there and I think he was second on his first ever rally. He won the Dirtfish Olympus rally, his second event in one of those cars. And then he won two or three times again. And, you know, to get into a car like that and drive at that speed was sensational. Also, the other big thing that Oliver did for me, and it's a nothing, you know, we all love it, but it's a nothing event in terms of competition. Goodwood Festival of Speed, when we saw him in that 600 horsepower, you know, regardless of the arena or the road or whatever, just to take those corners at that speed with the car at those angles and think nothing of it.
But here's the thing, you know, that event was attended by the great and the good of world motorsport and was watched by the great and the good. And the person they were all talking about at the end of that weekend was Oliver Solberg.
Who was the great and the good, Colin? I'm quite interested.
Well, George, I don't know. They come from some sport called F1, I think. I'm not entirely sure, but apparently.
All right.
Yeah, apparently. But here's the thing, David. You talked about this steady rise. I'll tell you where I think there was a seminal moment. Mm. And I think it was the end of last year and the start of this year. He had an enormously disappointing Rally GB. He then had quite a disappointing Monte Carlo.
Yeah.
And he was just slightly wounded by those two events.
And then Sweden didn't go to... I mean, he had a puncture late on. He was knocking on the door
There was that period where it could have gone one of two ways. He could have absolutely... It could have collapsed. Another mistake in Mexico.
Remember, was it a puncture? I can't remember.
Mexico was full of problems for them. They had all sorts of issues. But, you know, it could have gone one of two ways, and it has happened. Drivers have just disappeared after those sorts of disappointments. But he regrouped. He used the time with the layoff that we had. He regrouped, clearly spent a lot of time talking with his dad and doing whatever youngsters do.
Running the Solberg World Cup online?
Absolutely. They did all those things.
Should we talk about gaming? Do you want to talk about Virtual?
Go away. What is gaming? Gaming is what? Playing soccer? What is
really
gaming?
Really showing your age now.
Thanks, Lise. But he regrouped. He came back, and as you say, you know, the Rally de Roma was the first big event back. Mm. You know, who am I to argue with Petter Solberg? But I would say, from my point of view, from a very much an outsider's point of view, his best event without any question was Monza. Without any question.
That decision on the Saturday night not to chase Mikkelsen when he was only 14 seconds behind him. You know, the speed that he'd shown through Saturday to make all the time back on Andreas.
Yeah.
But then to have the presence of mind to say no. Yeah. I'm sitting in seventh overall. I'm not going to risk it.
Yeah.
You know,
but for me, the Saturday was the big day. You know, the Saturday was the day where experience came to play, and he doesn't have that experience, but he adapted. He learned. He coped with those conditions. He said there were a couple of stage times there which were just phenomenal. Yes, Rally de Roma was good. The depth of competition wasn't in Rome. You know, there really wasn't the depth of competition. There was massive depth of competition in Monza. You know, it was the largest R5 field I think we've ever seen in the championship, and it was quality drivers. There was you've got to remember, every time we go to Italy, you're coming up against a massive number of very, very, very competitive locals, you know, who know the roads like the back of their hands, and he absolutely blew them all away. I think Oliver Solberg is a great, great signing. Here is my question, and George, you will maybe have a little bit more insight into this. My question is, Petter has been so absolutely central and instrumental in the development of Oliver's career so far. How is Petter going to work effectively within the Hyundai setup underneath Adamo? You've got two massive, massive characters there. Can we see the potential for conflict and for trouble in that relationship? Will Petter have to take a slight sideways or backward step at all in all of this? What do you think, George?
Well, I mean, Adamo's a good, tough employer. And, you know, the drivers are his employees. How many places do you go to work? You take your dad along to tell the new employer how your son will do his job. You know, just to put an
Very
analogy on it. This was one of the big things when I worked with Uwe Andersson. He didn't like family along in his workplace. He didn't bring them himself, and we had a blanket ban on any of the team members, at least, bringing wives and girlfriends, and wives and girlfriends from the drivers were better than tolerated, of course, but they didn't have a front seat window within the team. Of course, the rallying at that time was more mobile. We were only just starting to come to the central services. But, you know, there was no massive facilities to be able to accommodate people like that. So, you know, people could come along, but they would go out and watch on the stages. They would come in and have a coffee. But, you know, at the service points as well, the drivers we had, the Juhas, the Carloses, the Didis, very focused on their job. No time to sit there and chew the fat with their mates or friends or somebody else to decide how to manage it. And I mean, the closest interference you got in the team was from a gravel crew, which were prevalent on all rallies, gravel and asphalt. And we worked very, very hard to make sure that those teams worked within the team's constraints. You know, those gravel crews worked within the team constraints, because very often, you know, all of a sudden they'd be phoning up the driver saying, oh, it's raining up here on the top, you need wets. Well, actually, hang on a second. We've got a whole mechanism in place. We've got professional weather forecasts. We've got established people figuring out how much of the stage is wet and how much is dry, what the best options are regarding our car setup with the tyre combination. And all of a sudden, you've got somebody without any of that vision and without any of that collateral trying to influence a team, you know, a team's decision. And, you know, I mean, you can think back to a couple of instances, you know, when Colin McRae drove the Citroen in Turkey, that year he drove in Turkey, and he made a tyre decision on the last day based on his gravel crew input rather than Citroen's input. Now, Citroen had, you know, by that time, were having incredible results with Sebastian Loeb. Was it one of the events that Sebastian Loeb missed because of an injury? I think Colin was drafted in, and yeah, all of a sudden, what was that? All of a sudden,
was that the moment he broke his arm?
Yeah, this I was in so. In the Kronos car, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In 2006.
Yeah. Aye. So you know why would you go against all that collateral? But they did, and that's the risk with bringing in, you know, a manager that decides what your driver's going to do, and from the manager's point of view, in this case, it's Petter. You know, he's in charge of making sure his son's Oliver's career goes the correct way, and he doesn't do anything silly, and he doesn't get the best for his son. But the same the team is paying for him to give performances, and that might, those things can quite often be at odds. But Petter knows these things. He's experienced them. I'm sure he's got the personality these days to absorb that and understand it. And
absolutely. Just to counter one of those points there, George, you're absolutely right. And that's brilliant, fabulous insight, you know, that none of us would ever have considered on the gravel crew side. But it just made me remember one time where you were dead wrong. And when was it when Ogier went out on Monty and he either took a brilliant tyre choice in the right direction or the wrong direction, and it was his I think he'd gone against his father or he'd gone with his father, who was out in the stages somewhere and had phoned him. But I can't remember for the life of me, but it was one time when he either did or didn't listen to his father and he really should have done.
David, all those types of decisions, they're a numbers game. And, you know, it's straightforward odds. When you're making those decisions about what the weather will do and what the best tyre choice is, it's a numbers game. If you've really done your homework and you've got all the science and all the collateral, you can maybe get it right about 8 times out of 10. Just 7 times out of 10, yeah? Of course, somebody can come along and sit up on the hillside and say, "Well, I can see it's going to be gorgeous sunshine here," and you've stuck to your strategy, where your strategy will ensure that 7 times out of 10 you will be correct. Yeah, you start to take those odds, you'll get one hit. Your odds will drop down to 2 or 3 times out of 10 that you'll be dead right, and then the other 7 times you'll be vastly wrong.
So here's the deal, George.
You've got to play the odds. You've got to play the professional game with all the professionals involved.
So it's very much, for me, it's very much, it's just part of the growing up process, isn't it? You know, and we've all been there, or more or less. You know, you're at home with your parents, and your parents ultimately... your parents ultimately make the decisions.
Some more than others, Lee.
Your parents ultimately make the decisions, and you defer to your parents. But at some point, You do grow up. You do become a big boy or big girl. You move to, and you have a boss, and you have to actually then defer to your boss. And that is really what we're saying here, is that Oliver, David, go ahead.
But again, you're chomping. Make sure it's
a good point, not like the last one, which was just,
was
I'm still trying to work the last one out.
Completely relying on you there. If only I had a colleague with a better memory, then you would have remembered that.
I know where you were, but anyway, go ahead.
So anyway, let's go back to Adamo, and let's, you know, we've talked endlessly with him about, you know, his own youth, and he was a guy who, you know, in his own words, he left the family home in Cuneo at 18, went to work in Lancia, and went to work to the university and stuff. He is somebody, you know, again, he said he wants to see Solberg fly the nest now. You know, there will be one boss at Hyundai. I think it's enormously naive on your part to think that Petter Solberg can go in there and have influence over, you know, we talked earlier about, is Tommy an autocratic leader? No, he's not. But Andrea Adamo, 100%, that's his team.
I put the question out there. There was nothing
naive about it. It was a ridiculous question.
Well, it might have been, but you helped answer it with a ridiculous answer.
Yeah, that's true. Petter will sit in the hospitality area. They'll have their table, just like we've seen everybody else, every other team. You know, there won't... There's part of me that thinks that, you know, Petter does have an absolute ability. Of course he does, at developing a car. You know, that it went slightly awry when in the latter days of Subaru. But still, look at what he did with those, with, you know, with the RX cars and all of that. There is a huge value in that, and potentially Hyundai could plug into that.
It's a free resource for them, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. But, you know, again, that really compromises that whole question of who they employed and how, you know, if you suddenly start to say, okay, we like that, these roll bar settings for Oliver, but then what does Petter think? You know, you begin to undermine everything that the team's doing.
But here's the thing with Petter. Here's the thing I've noticed with him. He is, you know, 100% immersed in his son's career, and you know, he had options to go to Extreme E. He had an offer from Extreme E, and he binned that to concentrate on Oliver. What I've noticed...
But he's not... I don't find him...
Well, let me... This is not critical. This is actually being supportive of Petter. And I agree with you. You know, Petter Solberg, much as he is a really excitable character and all the rest, he's also a very successful and thoughtful business person. He knows he knows what he's got to do in this relationship. But one thing that's really impressed me with Petter, and he's told me off a couple of times for it, yeah, I remember we were at Sweetland. Were you at Sweetland that time? You were, when Oliver was testing. And we were talking to Petter. I think it was about a year and a half ago, wasn't it? And I said to Petter, you know, how much input do you have into his driving style? And he looked at me quite flabbergasted. Nothing. Absolutely. And he was firm as you like. It was like, what a stupid question that. You know, he can drive a car. And I was like, so you know, what is it? Where does your experience come? Pace notes.
Pace notes.
And a lot of what Petter, yes, he'll give him advice on setup and all the rest, but ultimately, where he's telling him to do things, it's about the pace notes and the learning and the effort that goes into the pace notes. The rest of it, he lets Oliver get on with. He lets Oliver work his way through that learning process.
And that's where, you know, we have seen down the years so many fathers that are massively overbearing. You know, you go all the way back to Achim von Bold with Anthony von Bold, you know, when... And, you know, we heard these incredible stories where the father would make the pace notes and the son would be sat in the back of the car watching his father. It was bonkers. But for me, there's two guys that, as fathers, have it right. And I'm sure there's lots of fathers out there who have it right. But it's Petter and it's Marcus. You know, you talk to Grunholm about Nicholas and, you know, he doesn't kind of shove his son forward. Neither of them do. They both appreciate what they can do. But, you know, I've spoken to Petter and to Marcus on numerous occasions. You know, what if it all ends tomorrow? Then fine. You know, we'll go and play tennis.
Yeah.
We'll go and run the shopping centre. We'll go and do, you know, it's not the be-all and end-all. You know, they've both been world champions as fathers. They don't need their boys to be world champions as sons. You know, they just want whatever their son, whatever their, it's what every parent wants. You know, you want the best for your children.
It's going to be an interesting year, that's for sure. I can't wait to see
with you. I'm going to shuffle us on a bit, actually, because we've kind of skewed a bit more towards Petter than Oliver there. And as you say, it is going to be an interesting year. And we've seen Monte Carlo with its maximum entry list reached long before the closing date over the shortest course for a long, long time.
Ever.
Still looks like Monty to me.
In its
modern form, it still looks like a good Monty to me, guys.
In fairness, it's only...
So talk us through it.
It's only 15 miles shorter than last year, and it's simply because of the restrictions with coronavirus. You know, there is this...
So we're talking about the curfew.
Exactly.
That's what's affected it, yeah?
They can't be out late into the night, so that's why we've seen the itinerary for Thursday come forward by 3 hours. Traditionally, we'd go... we'd always go down to Casino Square. I mean, Monty was quite a drawn-out event. We'd have Shakedown on a Wednesday. Thursday morning, not the entire service park, but the media and the drivers and some of the teams would decamp down, you know, the 3 or 4 hour drive down to Monaco for the ceremonial start. From there, you'd make your way back up through two stages into Gap. And arriving in Gap at, you know, midnight or something, that can't happen this year. So they've they'd already decided not to do the Casino Square start because logistically it is a nightmare. But we were going to start out of Gap late Thursday afternoon and go into the evening. That's all brought forward 3 hours. The run, we have got exactly the same day on Friday as we'd expected. Saturday is shortened by one stage so that we can get down into Monaco earlier. And then Sunday, obviously Sunday was hugely impacted, not by coronavirus, but by Storm Alex, which demolished some of the bridges in the southern part of the Alpe Maritime. So they'd already decided they couldn't use Torini and these kind of the places around Sospel. So they've moved further north in the region and found, you know, I mean, but we've got to keep this in context. You know, George is dead right there that, you know, it's Monte. You know, any time that you bring in Peugeot, Thénier, these incredible stages, you know, we all make a big deal, and I'm as guilty as anybody, guilty, more guilty than most, making a big deal out of Turini. It is a fantastic element of Monte Carlo, but it's not the only one. And, you know, there
Can
are...
I say something controversial?
Yeah.
I think Turini, it's kind of lost it a wee bit. It's lost
well, we
it.
Haven't
I think
had
it's
great...
almost been overused. And the,
no,
and,
we haven't had a classic... Classic Turini, have we felt
That's
for
true.
A while?
That's true. Well, a few, yeah, unfortunately, was it cancelled? Remember the year they couldn't actually get up to the start? Was that
for
4 or 5
yeah.
years ago? I was up there last year on Turini, and it yeah, there was still a bit of atmosphere, but it wasn't that magical atmosphere.
But it's never going for me. And George, you'd know far better than me. But for me, it's never going to be that classic atmosphere. You know, I have never been up there at midnight, but I've heard the stories of when you know you are there at midnight.
I have been up there. Yeah, I have been up there. It's
and that's the magic.
That takes me back a few years to the IRC and standing at the final stop line at 1 a.m. And that was magic. That was, remember the year that, I think Miko won it, didn't he?
Mm.
Was it Miko or was it Ogier?
Wasn't it Ogier and Brian Bouffier as well won
yeah,
it one year?
Someone, was it Miko that someone on the way up to the final loop
Miko won
the
it in
the
Fiesta,
group.
Didn't he?
Yeah, he did. But yeah, that was a bit magical. And yeah, it's going to be interesting, the Monte Carlo Rally, guys, because as it stands, if we were running the Monte Carlo Rally next week, we'd be stuffed, and M Sport would be stuffed.
Yeah, because
we'd be completely
stuffed.
So it must be.
And one big point made by, once again, Steve Jones at Rallying UK makes all the right points. Said last night, you know, how does Elvin go with his test? How does all M Sport go with their test?
Do you know when they were talking about this yesterday? You know when they were, and it was quite clear. For those of you wondering what's happening, you know, Britain is being more or less annexed off from the rest of in more ways than one, but because of this new strain of this virus. And yesterday morning, you know, there was almost a snowball effect with various countries saying you can't come in, you
Holland
can't come in.
Holland first, then suddenly Italy.
I was thinking of Elvin, and I thought if I was Elvin Evans, I'd be getting on the first plane out of here and getting to mainland Europe. You know, get out of Britain and get into Europe so that it doesn't impact on any testing he might be doing. He could be stuck in the UK now for many, many, many weeks, and it could affect his pre-event build-up. I don't know.
We don't know.
We just don't know what's going on.
As we sit here now on, as Lisa said at the top of this podcast, it is the shortest day, 21st of December. It's a 48-hour window, isn't it? They've shut the window for the 48 hours. So, I don't know. I mean, I would hope, you'd imagine that, you know, we're not completely isolated here. There is apparently strains of this other
technically
mutation.
We are,
yeah, all right. But the, you know, the
we're
mutation.
Properly Brexited.
The yeah. That's,
flu
oh,
strains
God.
Always Let's, mutate, it's, guys. It's, there's not. There's yeah. nothing news about any
no, no,
of this.
No, we know
honestly,
that, George. We know that. But
it's all
what's
a bit
you know?
Nonsense, really.
What, you know,
the reaction.
The reaction
yeah,
is what we're talking about yeah. here. Mm. So it's
what my,
and the point is that you know I feel and we've said this many times on the podcast. I feel for event organisers. I feel a little
dreadful,
bit for the FIA, for the promoter. It's so difficult, and they're absolutely doing their best. And all we have to do is keep our fingers crossed. David, you might help me on this one. I've had it on good authority from someone who's very well connected with Monaco that it's either the dates we have or it is no Monte Carlo.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's talk about perhaps Monte Carlo taking the dates of Rally Sweden. That is not
they
an
can't,
option.
No.
Not an option. It's either that weekend
it can't because,
or
you know,
it won't happen.
Obviously there's a huge infrastructure with that event. Yeah. You know, all of the gendarmes and all of that needs to be put in place, the road closures, and you can't just lift these things up. Certainly not. And you know, not when you're dealing with a principality like Monaco, which, you know, it's not your average country, is it? You know, things have to be planned and no, it can't be moved. Not in the way that, I mean, Sweden, obviously we've seen that Sweden's been cancelled, and there's now a great deal of debate about Arctic Rally, and does the Arctic Rally move? Will the Arctic Rally run? Are they going to run a second Arctic Rally? I suspect that's slightly easier because you're still running on public roads, but in a very remote part of the world.
Apparently not. The Arctic Rally, an awful lot of the Arctic Rally stages are on military roads, apparently.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Yes, they are. You didn't know that, did you?
I didn't know that.
Do I surprise you at times?
No.
I have picked up that absolute gem of information from the oracle of everything to be trusted, Twitter. So let's not. If I am wrong there, I do apologise. But my understanding
was that tweet from POTUS, was it?
My understanding is that quite a lot of Arctic Rally route is on military roads.
Okay.
So, I'm disappointed. I thought you were going to comment on POTUS there. Sorry.
No. Sorry, Georgie. but interesting times. And listen, I have to say, can I say one more thing? A massive, massive hats off to David and the editorial team at Dirtfish. It was just incredible, David Evans, how you stayed on top of it. You broke a lot of that news. It was one of your finest days, I thought, mate. It really was. I could see the smoke coming off your pencil from Staffordshire.
But it was a great day. You know, these days occasionally...
It was our WhatsApp group as well that Colin went, do you think we can get the podcast in today? And as a firm, no.
Sorry about that. I may have been slightly grumpy, but there was just every now and then these days happen. And you can kind of wake up and think, yeah, what should we do today? What should we write about today? And then it just all happens, and you get a whole load of stuff, and it's great. And it was, you know, it was a very exciting day, wasn't it? You know, Jari Matti Latvala and Solberg, and you know, news on Monty. These are okay. The news isn't always brilliant, but you know, news is news, and news is personally what I live for. So, any busy news day is a great day for me. Hello?
Well, that's kind of, yeah.
No, sorry, Lisa.
What do we say about that?
I was just thinking you might pick up and say that's a good point to end things on.
Well, I was
nodding
my
head,
that,
honestly.
So was I.
That is a good point.
We're all nodding off, actually.
to draw a line under 2020. Wow. There's so many good things about 2020, but many more bad things. So if you want to just take it, do you know how in some events you get to write off an event and it doesn't count towards your final score? Well, I think 2020 can get written off in many ways for some of us. But it has actually given us a chance to see innovation pushed forward in so many ways. And I'm just thinking right back to the beginning of Spin the Rally Pod, when we were speaking to people that were dealing with the front line of the COVID situation. For example, the nurse that we spoke to, Colin, in New York, who was talking about working on the front line with that, and how the motorsport industry was, you know, working on ventilators to help people who were trying to recover from this horrendous disease. So it's been an incredible year of strangeness, but also innovation.
There's been a lot of very positive points. There's a lot of hope. There's been a lot. We genuinely, and this sounds corny, but we have seen the best of people. We have, you know, I do remember saying during the COVID, the main COVID, the first wave of COVID, that, you know, people just seem so much nicer, so much more respectful, so much more caring than perhaps we'd seen in the past. And I think that's continued on, and I think that's great. And as you say, Lise, you know, David and I were down at ProDrive the other day, and we actually got to see that ventilator that they... I think it may have gone into production for parts of Africa. I can't remember, but it was a great effort from everyone there at ProDrive. And, you know, you got a feel for... We had Steve Perez on our programme, and he was talking about his personal experience with ventilators, but he was also talking about, you know, his business, and a big part of his business is the hospitality industry. And, you know, Steve has helped out many, many others, nurses, frontline workers, allowing them to stay for free in his hotels while they were closed down. And now he's struggling, but you know, because his business is closed, he can't open for Christmas. And you know, you feel for these people, and as I say, we have seen the very, very best in a lot of people around us. Steve being very much one of them.
So I've just got to say something here.
Go ahead.
The year started quite badly for me. It started with me standing in the French Alps, staring at Colin in his underpants.
No, this was unfortunate.
And it went downhill from
this was,
there.
This was, you know, I had one of those moments, right? This is a true story, Lise. And George, I bought a packet of boxers, the white boxers, three in the packet. Two were the correct size. One was the wrong size. One was massive. They're like granny pants. Absolutely massive.
Most normal people would have used them as a duster.
Yes. And I'd packed them and I'd put them on that morning and I thought, well, no one's going to know, are they? They looked horrendous.
And unfortunately, he'd forgotten to put his long johns on, so he then decided to take his jeans off. And put his long johns on.
So my very baggy white boxer shorts made a public appearance, which was recorded. There's a picture doing the round somewhere.
And we're making a video about the highlights and lowlights of the year. And I'm sure at some point that will feature.
Oh, thanks. Thanks,
so
David,
no, but it has been quite a remarkable year, and you know, a year that actually on a personal level as well. I can't let this opportunity pass without saying a huge, enormous thanks to Steve Rimmer, and to everybody at Dirtfish, to Trevor and to Justin, and you know, the people that completely put their faith in us in a year which, you know, has been unbelievably difficult for the sport. You know, I'd like to think that we've made a bit of a difference and we've told some stories. And, it was really, really nice when we went to Estonia, the first WRC round back after lockdown, to the number of people that came up to Colin and to myself and just said, you know, thank you for helping to get us through lockdown. And that meant so much. You know, that's all we could set out to do in these very strange times, and hopefully we achieved it. So it's, it's been an incredible
David,
year.
David, I would add my thanks to Dirtfish for the fabulous unbiased news we've got this year. You know, as a fanboy, this is me speaking as a fanboy, it's a privilege for me to be allowed to make a little bit input with you guys every now and again, and I love that opportunity. But most of all, I'm hanging on your every word that comes out on the website, so thank you for that.
Thank you, George, and again, thank you for the input. You know, it's been amazing.
It's a pleasure. Occasionally I say something that's sensible.
And I keep it in as well. I don't edit it out, George. I leave it in.
Lisa, thank you for that. Yeah, Lisa, but we know that you've got an evil cut on you as an editor.
Well, I just want to say a big thank you to everyone who's downloaded the podcast over the year. Please stay tuned. We are going to get round to that green podcast talking about electric vehicles and the future. Yes, we will. Mm. And we might even talk about George's new purchase that goes like a rocket ship, apparently. So thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. Dirtfish.com. Stay tuned, because obviously, even though we are going to give David a couple of days off, he won't be able to resist writing one or two things. And there will be plenty seasonal stuff over on the website, dirtfish.com, to keep you entertained throughout the years. And it has been a tough year for everyone. But the positive that I'm taking from this shortest day of the year is that we're turning the corner, the days are getting longer, and summer's on its way.
Yay.
Happy Christmas, everyone.
Thanks, Reese. Yep.
Thank you, Lisa. Well done, Lisa. Thanks, Colin, David.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you.
Talk later.